Thank you. Thank you all. It looks like, to me, Missouri is ready for a political revolution. Thank you all for coming out. Let me thank the John Henry Band, Billy Moffitt, Megan Green, Claude Cummings Jr., Michael Dorwood, and what about Jonathan Jackson? Thank you, Jonathan. Ten months ago, we started this campaign, and we were at 3% in the polls. 10 months have come and gone, and the world has changed politically. There was once a candidate who was the anointed one, who was inevitable. Today, she is not so inevitable. Ten months have come, and we have now won 9 primaries and caucuses. Almost all of them by double-digit numbers. And if there is a large turnout in Missouri tomorrow, we're going to win this state. So if we are going to make a political revolution, if we're going to transform this country, if we're going to have a government that represents all of us rather than a handful of wealthy campaign contributors, we need to win here. We need a large voter turnout. Help make that happen. Now, this campaign is defying all of the expectations because we're doing something very radical for American politics. We are telling the truth. And you know, the truth is not always pleasant. Sometimes it's easier for a politician to tell you some jokes and pass the easy evening pleasantly. But it's too late for jokes, and it's time to get serious about the serious problems that we face. Let me start off by telling you what most of you already know, that in this country, which historically has been one of the great democracies in the world, today we have a corrupt campaign finance system which is destroying American democracy. Now, the concept of democracy really is not complicated. What it is about is one person, one vote, majority rules. That's about it. And what that means is you want to vote for me, great. You want to vote against me, that's all right. But you get one vote. But what is happening today is you get one vote, but the Koch brothers and other billionaires are spending hundreds of millions of dollars to try to buy elections. That's not democracy. That is not democracy. That is called oligarchy. And together, we're going to stop that. But it is not only Citizens United and a corrupt campaign finance system. We have Republican governors all over this country who are working overtime trying to suppress the vote. Now, it seems to me, when we have one of the lowest voter turnouts of any major country on earth, that we should be working hard to try to increase voter turnout, get more people to participate. But these Republican governors are political cowards. They are afraid of free and fair elections. The only way they think they can win elections is by denying people who might vote against them the right to vote. And I say to those cowards, if you don't have the guts to run in a free and fair election, get out of politics, get another job. Stop making it hard for the elderly, for the poor, for working people to participate in the political process. If there is anything that is un-American, denying people the right to vote is un-American. But it's not only a corrupt campaign finance system which is allowing billionaires to buy elections that we've got to worry about. We've got to worry about a rigged economy. And let me tell you what a rigged economy is about. In this great country today, we are the wealthiest nation in the history of the world. But most Americans don't know that. And the reason they don't know that is that almost all of the new income and wealth is going to the top 1%. The reason they don't know that is that today, if you can believe it, the top 1/10 of 1%, not 1%, 1/10 of 1%, now owns almost as much wealth as the bottom 90%. That is more wealth inequality than any other major country on earth, and worse in this country than at any time since 1928. Today in this country, the 20 wealthiest people, 20 people, not a lot of people, own more wealth than the bottom half of America, 150 million people. I want to tell you how a rigged economy works. Today, one family, the Walton family of Walmarts, you are familiar with the Walton family. All right. This is the wealthiest family in the country, and that one family owns more wealth than the bottom 40% of Americans. But here is how the rigged economy works. The Walton family pays its employees at Walmart wages that are so low that many of their workers are forced to go on Medicaid, food stamps, and subsidized housing. And do you know who pays for those food stamps, Medicaid? You do. So what a rigged economy is about is that the middle class and working class of this country pays taxes in order to subsidize the business of the wealthiest family in this country. That is crazy. So I say to the Walton family, get off of welfare, pay your workers a living wage. But it is not only inequality in wealth, as grotesque as that is. Today in America, in my state of Vermont, and here in Missouri, there are people who are working not one job, they're working two jobs, they're working three jobs. I see those hands going up. Three jobs in order to bring in enough income to take care of their families and maybe get some health insurance. All over this country, you got mom working, you got dad working, you got the kids working, you got marriages struggling because parents don't have the time to spend with each other. You got kids not getting the attention they need from their parents because their parents are busy working. Now, what the young people don't know, but it's true, is that 40 years ago, we had a situation where in most families, one person could bring in enough income to take care of the whole family. And today, you got two people working, and often they are not making enough money to pay the bills. That is a rigged economy, especially when we know that despite the fact that we work so hard and we work the longest hours of any people in the industrialized world, Japanese are hard workers, we work longer hours than the Japanese. Despite all of that effort, 58% of all new income created today, 58% goes to the top 1%. That's a rigged economy. You guys ready for a radical idea? Yeah. All right, together we are going to create an economy that works for working people, not just the billionaires. But it is not just a corrupt campaign finance system that we have to worry about. It is not just a rigged economy. We have to worry about a broken criminal justice system. Now, what this campaign is about is urging you to think outside of the box. Don't think within the framework of what media would like you to think of. Think bigger than that. Ask the hard questions. Ask yourself a question. Why is it that in this country, wealthiest country in the world, we have more people in jail than any other country? Why is that? Why is it? There you go, you got a good sign there. 1 year in jail costs more than 1 year at Yale. We are spending $80 billion a year to lock up 2.2 million people. China has four times our population, is a communist, authoritarian country that does not tolerate dissent particularly well. Is the sound system? There we go, okay. And we have more people in jail than China. What we need to do is reform big time our criminal justice system. And let me give you some examples of that. Number one, what the media doesn't talk about very often is the rate of youth unemployment in this country is off the charts. If you have white kids between 17 and 20 who graduated high school, 33% unemployed or underemployed. Latino kids, 36%. African American kids, 51% unemployed or underemployed. And that sign has got it exactly right. What we are going to do is invest in our young people in education and jobs. Not in jails and incarceration. Our job together, and again, think outside of the box. Our vision is to create the best educated society on earth, not one that has millions of people rotting away in jail. Now, I am a former mayor. I have worked with police departments in my own state all over this country. Vast majority of police officers are honest, hardworking, and they have a very difficult job. Not easy being a cop. But like any other public official, when a police officer breaks the law, that officer must be held accountable. We need to demilitarize local police departments. Police departments should not look like occupying armies. We have got to make local police departments look like the diversity of the communities they are serving. In my state of Vermont, in neighboring New Hampshire, and all over this country, we have a major crisis in heroin addiction and in opiate addiction. People are dying every day from overdoses. Kids are getting sucked in to opiates and then heroin. What we have got to understand when we talk about a broken criminal justice system is that what we need for people who are addicted, who are into substance abuse, what we need is health care, not jail care. We need a revolution in mental health care in this country. Mental health care is part of health care. When people need help, they should be able to get help now, not 4 months from now. And when we talk about a broken criminal justice system, it is appropriate to understand that in many respects, the so-called war on drugs has failed. In the last 30 years, millions of Americans have received police records for possession of marijuana. Right now, in the Federal Controlled Substance Act, marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug right next to heroin. Now, I hope and expect that everybody here knows that heroin is a killer drug. We can argue about the pluses and minuses of marijuana, but marijuana is not heroin, that's for sure. And here is the racial component of that issue. It turns out that the white community and the black community do marijuana at about equal rates. But blacks are four times more likely to be arrested for marijuana than whites. And that is why I have introduced legislation that would take marijuana out of the Federal Controlled Substance Act. It is a state decision, not a federal decision, as to whether or not marijuana is legalized. Four states have done that. But what I believe is that possession of marijuana should not be a federal crime. Let me, for a moment, talk about some of the very important differences of opinion that I have with Hillary Clinton. And you could tell a lot about a candidate in terms of how that candidate raises money for the campaign. Now, when we began this campaign, we had to make a decision. And that decision was, should we establish, as every other candidate has, a super PAC? Should we go begging to Wall Street and billionaires for campaign contributions? Well, we thought about it for a tenth of a second, and we agreed with you. No, we don't want a super PAC. We don't represent billionaires. We don't represent Wall Street. We don't want their money. We're going to do it a different way. And the way we did it was pretty simple. We asked the American people, working families, for help. And you know what happened? What happened over the last 10 months is we have received 5 million individual contributions. That is more campaign contributions than any candidate in the history of America at this point. Anybody here know what the average contribution is? You're right, $27. So this is a campaign which has said to the big money interest, we don't need your money. We'll get money from ordinary people. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln at Gettysburg, this is a campaign of the people, by the people, and for the people. Now, Secretary Clinton has chosen to go a different route in terms of raising money. She has several super PACs, and in the last financial report period, her major super PAC reported that they had received $25 million from special interest, including $15 million from Wall Street. In addition to that, as some of you may know, Secretary Clinton has given major speeches behind closed doors to Wall Street companies like Goldman Sachs. And she was paid $225,000 per speech. Now, what I think is if you get $225,000 for a speech, and she gave a number of those speeches, that speech must be an extraordinarily brilliant speech, right? It must be a mind-blowing speech. It must be a Shakespearean speech. It must be a speech that could educate and enlighten the entire world. So I think the Secretary should release the transcript of that speech. I think the American people have the right to know if what she says behind closed doors in Wall Street is the same thing she says to the American people. Now, Secretary Clinton has said, okay, well, I am prepared to release my transcripts if other people do the same. So I am prepared right here tonight. Are you all ready for this? All right. This is a dramatic moment. At this moment, I announce I am prepared to release all of the transcripts of the speeches I gave to Wall Street. And here they are. And the reason I can release the transcripts is, of course, there are no transcripts. But if Wall Street were desirous of inviting me to say hello to them, I don't need $225,000 to drop in. I'd be happy to. And this is what I would say to Wall Street if they were so kind to invite me. What I would say is that Wall Street's greed, recklessness, and illegal behavior drove this country into the worst economic downturn since the Great Depression. What I would say to them is that after we bailed out the banks because they were too big to fail, three out of the four largest banks today are bigger now than they were when we bailed them out because they were too big to fail. What I would mention to them is that the six largest financial institutions in this country have assets equivalent to 58% of the GDP of this country. They issue two-thirds of the credit cards and one-third of the mortgages. And what I would say to them is that when a small group of people has so much economic and political power, we have got to break them up. Now, I don't know, maybe that's why they haven't invited me to speak to them. I could be wrong, but maybe that's not the message they wanted to hear. Now, here is another issue. Wall Street and how you raise money is a huge issue, but there's another issue out there as well. And that is not a sexy issue. It's an issue that the media virtually ignores completely. But that is the trade issue. And the fact that for 30 years we have had disastrous trade policies that have cost this country millions of decent paying jobs. Now, when I was first elected to Congress and took office in 1991, it took me about 8 seconds to figure out that these trade agreements were written by corporate America and that what their function was to say to people in Missouri, people in Vermont, why would we pay you a living wage? Why would we pay you 20, 30 bucks an hour when we could shut down here in the United States, move to Mexico, move to China, pay people pennies an hour and then bring those products back into this country. And that is exactly what has happened. Since 2001 in this country, we have lost almost 60,000 factories. As a result of NAFTA and CAFTA and permanent normal trade relations with China, we have lost millions of decent paying jobs. I have been one of the leaders in opposition to every one of these disastrous trade agreements. Secretary Clinton has supported virtually all of them. And I've got a message for corporate America. Every night you watch TV and they got all these ads, buy this product, buy that product. If they want us to buy their products, they damn well better start manufacturing those products in the United States, not in China, not in Mexico. We need a trade policy that works for working families, that helps poor people abroad, not a trade policy designed to helping just the CEOs of large multinational corporations. And here is another difference between Secretary Clinton and myself. All of you know that one of the important parts of the job of being president is foreign policy, and an enormously important part of that job. In 2002, this country debated the most important foreign policy issue in the modern history of this country. I listened to what President Bush and Vice President Cheney and all the rest had to say about Iraq. I didn't believe what they said. I voted against the war in Iraq. Secretary Clinton was then in the Senate. She listened to the same evidence that I listened to. She voted for the war. That war was the worst foreign policy mistake in the modern history of America. Now, the reason our campaign is doing well is that instead of listening to wealthy campaign contributors, we are listening to ordinary Americans. We are listening to workers all over this country who are telling me they cannot make it on $8 or $9 an hour. They are telling me, and I agree, we've got to raise the minimum wage to a living wage, $15 an hour. This campaign is listening to senior citizens and disabled veterans. And what they are telling me is they cannot make it on $11,000 or $12,000 a year Social Security. They can't buy the health care, the medicine, the food they need on $11,000 or $12,000. Now, amazingly, preposterously, you got Republicans out there who want to cut Social Security. Well, I've got some bad news for them. We're not going to cut Social Security. We're going to raise Social Security benefits. A great nation is judged not by how many millionaires and billionaires it has. It is judged by how it treats the weakest and most vulnerable amongst us. And we are not going to turn our backs on our parents and our grandparents who are struggling with inadequate Social Security benefits. This campaign is listening to young people. And what young people are telling me is, how does it happen that they end up 30, 50,000 or more in debt simply because they got the education that they needed? Again, if you take a deep breath and you think outside of the box, outside of status quo, think about it. We are in a competitive global economy. We need the best educated workforce in the world. Why are we punishing people for doing what they're supposed to be doing, getting the education they need? You know, 50 years ago, if you had a high school degree, the odds are you were going to do pretty well. You can go out and get a good job. That's the fact. The world has changed. Today, the economy is different. Today, people need more education. In my view, when we talk about public education today, it is not good enough to just talk about first grade through 12th grade. We have got to make public colleges and universities tuition free. That's not a radical idea. The economy has changed, the world has changed. People need more education. Not a radical idea. They're doing it in Germany. They're doing it in Scandinavia. They're doing it elsewhere. Now, let me tell you something which some of you may not know. 50 years ago in the United States, the great public colleges and universities in this country were virtually tuition free. If we could do it then, we could do it now. I have talked to people all over this country. People have gone to medical school, $300,000 in debt. Dental school, $400,000 in debt. Guy drops out of college in Iowa, $60,000 in debt after 2 years of college. What we have got to do is help people reduce their student debt. We have got to allow people to refinance their loans at the lowest interest rates they can find. Now, my opponents tell me, my critics tell me, well, Bernie, you know, you're Santa Claus, you're a nice guy, you're giving away all this free stuff. How are you going to pay for it? Well, I will tell you how we are going to pay for it. Wall Street was bailed out by Congress. I believe that now is the time to impose a tax on Wall Street speculation. Now is the time for Wall Street to help the American middle class. This campaign is listening to women. And what women are telling me is, how does it happen that they go to work and they do the same job as a man, but they're paid 79 cents on the dollar for that work? And I know that every man in this room will stand with the women in the fight for pay equity for women. There is no rational economic reason why women are paid less than men. It's just old-fashioned sexism, and together we're going to change it. This campaign is listening to our brothers and sisters in the Latino community. And they are tired of being exploited. They are tired of living in the shadows. They are tired of being afraid. They want, and I want, comprehensive immigration reform and a path towards citizenship. This campaign is listening to the Native American community. Native Americans, the first Americans, have been lied to, have been cheated, have had treaties broken, and today are finding themselves, in many cases, in very difficult straits. If elected president, I will give Native Americans the respect and dignity that they are due. I am a member of the Senate Committee on the Environment, and in that regard, that capacity, I have met with scientists all over our country and all over the world. And what the scientific community tells us virtually unanimously is that climate change is real. Climate change is caused by human activity. Climate change is already causing devastating problems in this country and around the world. And what the scientists tell us is very scary stuff. What they say, if we do not act aggressively to transform our energy system, by the end of this century, this planet will be between 5 to 10 degrees Fahrenheit warmer. And that will mean more drought, more floods, more extreme weather disturbances, more destruction of the ocean, more rising sea levels and the flooding of coastal regions. It will mean more international conflict because people around the world will be fighting over limited natural resources. We have the moral responsibility to make certain that the planet we leave future generations is a planet that is healthy and habitable. And that means that we must have the courage to take on the fossil fuel industry and to tell them that their short-term profits are not as important as the future of this planet. Now, you know, you got a lot of Republicans running all over this country, and they talk about family values, how much they love families, stay up nights worrying about families. But all of you, I hope, understand what they mean by family values. What they mean is that no woman in this arena, in this state, in this country, should have the right to control her own body. I disagree. What they mean by family values is that our gay brothers and sisters should not have the right to be married. I disagree. Now, I have been married for 27 years, got 4 great kids, 7 grandchildren. And I believe in family values, but very different values than the Republicans believe in. When I talk about family values, I am talking about ending the international embarrassment in which we are the only major country on earth not to guarantee paid family and medical leave. And what that means, this is what it means. And I want you again, think outside of the box. And we've got to ask why. Why do we tolerate a situation where a working class woman today in Missouri or Vermont gives birth, has a beautiful baby, but that woman, because she does not have a lot of money, may be forced to separate herself from that baby and go back to work to earn the income she needs to take care of her family? Every other major country has said that is wrong. Mom has a right to stay home with the baby. And that is why, together, we will pass 3 months paid family and medical leave. Now, I have been criticized for a whole lot of things, and very heavily criticized for talking out on health care. So let me say a word, because I don't want there to be any confusion, any ambiguity about my views on this issue. I believe that healthcare is a right of all people. I believe that there is something a little bit nuts when every other major country, United Kingdom, France, Germany, Holland, Scandinavia, Canada, Italy, every major country is able to guarantee health care to all of their people, but we can't. Something is wrong. The Affordable Care Act has done some very good things. We provided health insurance for 17 million more Americans. We've done away with pre-existing conditions. And we've done away with discrimination against women in terms of the price they pay for premiums. But, today 29 million Americans still have no health insurance. Many of you are underinsured with high deductibles and high copayments. And all of us pay by far the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs. In fact, the pharmaceutical industry is ripping us off so badly that 1 out of 5 Americans cannot even afford to fill the prescriptions their doctors are prescribing. That is crazy. We got veterans out there who are struggling with hepatitis C. They got a new drug out there, which is a very good drug, cost $1,000 a pill. In my view, with so many people uninsured, underinsured, drug companies ripping us off, when we pay far higher prices per capita than any other country on earth for health care, the time is now for a Medicare for all healthcare system. Every person here understands something very profound about history. and that is real change never takes place from the top on down, always takes place from the bottom on up. Employers and corporations never gave workers the right to form unions. Workers fought for those rights and for collective bargaining. Nobody gave African Americans civil rights. African Americans and their white allies fought for civil rights. A 100 years ago, not a long period of time, 100 years ago, women in this country did not even have the right to vote, could not get the education they desired, could not do the jobs they wanted. But what women did with their male allies said, sorry, in this country, women will not be treated as second-class citizens. They stood up and fought back. If we were here a mere 10 years ago, not a very long time, and somebody stood up and said, you know, I think that gay marriage will be legal in 50 states in America in the year 2015, the person next to him would have said, what are you smoking? That's crazy. But because the gay community and their straight allies were prepared to stand up and fight and say that in America, people have the right to love whoever they want, we made progress. Five years ago, somebody in this room, we were meeting and somebody in this room said, Bernie, you know, this minimum wage of 7 1/4 is a joke. Nobody can live on it. We've got to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. The person next to him would have said, $15 an hour? You're crazy. That's more than double the minimum wage. Can't be done. Can't be done. Can't be done. But you know what happened? People in the fast food industry, people in McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's, they went out on strike. They stood up. They fought back. And you know what's happened? Seattle, $15 an hour. San Francisco, Los Angeles, $15 an hour. Oregon, $15 an hour. What my point is, that what looks impossible today is not impossible if we are prepared to stand up and fight for change. And that is what this campaign is about. Now, on Tuesday, tomorrow, there is going to be a very, very important election here in Missouri. We will win this election if there's a large, we will win if there is a large voter turnout. We will lose if there is a low voter turnout. What I am asking you now is to have this great state help lead the effort toward a political revolution. Come out and vote. Bring your friends and your neighbors. Thank you all very much.
Let all the children do get it.